You're listening to Zentertainment Talk Radio on the web at zentertainment.org. My name is Joe Davidson. Thanks so much for joining me. And if this is your first time listening, please sign up for the newsletter, which is free. And that way I can let you know about upcoming podcast episodes. They're all available to download, and make sure to do that because I do archive them eventually. My guest today is Lisa Wimberger, and she has an amazing story. Lisa was struck by lightning when she was 15 years old, and she went on to develop a pretty serious seizure disorder. She eventually healed herself by using different tools and techniques in the field of neuroplasticity, and she teaches those now. You can find out more about her at neurosculptinginstitute.com. She has a new book out called Neurosculpting, a Whole Brain Approach to Heal Trauma, Rewrite Limiting Beliefs, and Find Wholeness. So I'm excited to hear from her. I wanted to share something with you that I was reading in the Daniel Plan the other day that I thought was pretty amazing. The Daniel Plan is a great book that's written by Rick Warren, Daniel Amen, and Mark Hyman. So the psychologist Noelle Nelson, in her book, The Power of Appreciation in Everyday Life, she described a study where she had a brain SPECT scan. She had it done twice. The first time she was scanned after 30 minutes of meditating on all the things she was grateful for in her life. 30 minutes of meditating on that. So then she was scanned. Okay, several days later, she did another meditation where she focused on the major fears in her life, and then she was scanned again. You won't believe the results. After the appreciation exercise, her brain looked healthy. The scan that was taken after she focused on her fears, however, looked very different. Activity in two parts of her brain had significantly dropped. Her cerebellum completely shut down. The other area of her brain that was affected was the temporal lobes, especially the one on the left. And the temporal lobes are involved with mood, memory, temper control, problems with this part of the brain can be associated with some forms of depression, dark thoughts, violence, memory problems. So this study showed that practicing gratitude literally helps you have a brain to be thankful for. And if you want to take this further into the spiritual realm, check out the Bible verse Philippians 4:6-7. It makes a connection between gratitude and peace of mind. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. So this is what I read in the Daniel Plan, and it impressed me so much. It really did. So I'm excited to have Lisa on the show today. I want to share her story with you and, you know, just share some of the tools and techniques she uses and her training, her website. You can find a lot of free articles as well on her website, neurosculptinginstitute.com. A lot of this research is showing people recovering from things that, you know, doctors might have said were impossible to recover from, right, Lisa?
Absolutely. That's my entire mission, is to help people have tools so that they can have their breakthroughs on their own terms and move through the traumatic stories. I mean, events are events. It's the relationship we create continually with regards to that event that determines whether or not we store trauma or are healthy. And because the event is already done, we are in an opportunity of control and empowerment to renegotiate our relationship to that which has already passed.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the limbic system, because, you know, maybe someone out there, you know, you might be going through, maybe you've been through a really hard illness, maybe you've been through a big emotional trauma, whatever it is, these things create changes in the brain and in the limbic system. I wondered, Lisa, if you could talk a little bit more about some of those changes that happen.
Absolutely. So the limbic system is our generally known as our fight or flight center, and it involves a couple different areas of the brain in association with each other. These areas create a concerted, orchestrated response that is typically preconscious. It's designed to save our lives, to make us react to threat before we waste energy and analyzing it. If we had to analyze every threat, we would all be dead by now. So it's very fast, it's very preconscious, It gets inputs from all lobes of the brain simultaneously, so it is a parallel processor. Its processing speed is far greater than our higher thought processes, which are typically slower. Mm-hmm. So because this is so fast and so honed, it takes over quickly. Now, when it takes over and it recognizes a fear, what your amygdala is doing is taking snapshots, like a camera, of everything going on around you, and you are assigning meaning of fear or threat or danger to all of those images, and you store that. So now tomorrow, because you've stored that with a lot of emotional charge, tomorrow if you encounter factors resembling any of the factors involved in your experience yesterday, you will elicit a small level fight or flight response due to the associations. Right. And those networks in the limbic system, those neural networks, are firing again and then again, mm-hmm. and then again. And the more they fire, meaning the more they send their electrical signals, the stronger they get. They potentiate. It's called long-term potentiation. Mm-hmm. They hone their ability to fire. So they need less of a provocation. Their threshold goes down, so they fire more quickly. They fire more strongly. You increase the strength of the synaptic gap, so now those neurotransmitters have more receptors to pick them up and experience this with. And then those neurons grow dendritic branches to touch other maps. Mm-hmm. So you are using the fear response as a muscle to affect the function and structure of the brain. And the more that's repeated, the more it is entrained, and it becomes the dominant muscle.
Well, let's talk a little bit more about how do we break the cycle, because that's what people need to know how to do.
Absolutely. It's a multifaceted approach, and I'm going to suggest that we as humans start engaging all of the holistic approach so we'll heal faster. My favorite technique is to shake. Tremor shaking, tremor release exercises. There are videos on YouTube that teach you how to do this. Or just every morning, I start shaking in the bathroom, my body wildly, almost in a convulsive way. And what that does is it takes any of that contracted muscle memory of an adrenalated contraction, and it dissipates it. It's what animals do in the wild when they escape a predator. Their pelts will twitch until they have reached homeostasis in their nervous system. So when you're in stress, the best thing to do is dissipate those levels of adrenaline and cortisol by shaking. And it may feel awkward and strange, so I suggest doing it behind a closed door. But it's a very fast way to regulate your nervous system back to a down-regulated fight-or-flight response. Mm-hmm. And you're affecting your neuroplastic associations with those fear stories if you don't hold on to them. And shaking is a great way to not hold on to them. The neurosculpting meditations that we do at the Institute teach people how to construct a lobal relationship in their brain to actually downregulate their fight or flight center, and that's a whole process. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, there is physical exercise, which is vital to our ability to overcome that limbic dominance, and then diet. And I can't stress diet enough. A carbohydrate-based diet will feed your stress cycles. So it's really important to watch the type and the amount of carbohydrates that we eat, and to absolutely bring in healthy fats and proteins into the diet, because without those, we can't make our neurotransmitters, and we can't line the axons so we send nerve signals appropriately and cleanly. We misfire when we don't have healthy protein and healthy fat. I eat meat, so this is appropriate for a meat-based diet. But if you're a vegan or if you're a vegetarian, then you have to just make sure you get your protein from sources that you are comfortable with. But for me, healthy fats are olive oil, coconut oil, salmon, different sorts of cold water fish. Oh, and then for protein, absolutely grass-fed beef. So these are just generalizations.
Right.
But one thing is scientific. If you don't have protein from whatever source you get it from, you cannot build neurotransmitters. They are made of protein. You can't build red blood cells. You can't build bone, muscle, and you cannot build neurotransmitters. That is just biology. So being respectful of everyone's lifestyle choice, just make sure you are choosing the right and healthy proteins for you. And yes, you absolutely do need protein. And each person's going to vary in their amount that they actually need.
So often we don't realize that we're operating in fear and threat responses. Let's take our news media. It's pretty unnatural to gather all the bad things happening in the world, things that are beyond our control, put them into, you know, 1 hour, package it as a program, and call that the news.
So right. I have a special niche where I work with law enforcement, and I've trained over 1,000 officers at this point. And your example of the news, of gathering the most negative stories and concentrating them into a picture of the world, is exactly what officers have to deal with, because they are seeing the most aberrant portions of society and concentrating those into their view of the outside world. And nobody suffers as an industry more immediate trauma and vicarious trauma than law enforcement or soldiers. Mm-hmm. And this is really, really detrimental to the brain. And some people have accused me of having my head in the sand or wearing rose-colored glasses because I like to focus on the positive. But the truth is, I'm not ignoring what's going on in the world. I am choosing to turn off the bombardment that is stimulating my limbic system, because that is a dominant system anyway. It does not need any help.
Right.
So now, like you, I don't watch the news. I get everything real time from the neighbors and from social media. I know when we're at war. I know when there's a health crisis.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't need to have that running as an additional script.
Right.
As a chronic additional script. So what I have to do to combat that for my brain health, for my spirit health, is to cultivate a focus on the positive stories. That is neuroplasticity, is the intentional focus on an experience creates a memory of that, and then a structure and functional change in the brain. So even if you think, well, I'm not affected by the news, I can tell you on a neurological level, you absolutely are. It is a discipline. I did not come into this world as the absolute jovial, carefree person. I grew up pretty jaded, pretty cynical, pretty judgmental. It's a discipline. I have to work every single day at choosing what I focus on. That it doesn't just happen because I wish it to. It happens because I cultivate a practice around it, and it has changed my life, and I watch it change the lives of all of my students and all of my practitioners. I watch people shed layers and layers of embedded fear that doesn't serve them anymore. Maybe it did at one time, but it doesn't now.
And you can't be in a state of survival at the same time as a state of growth. So you want to get into a state of growth. And it's kind of also like if you're at the top of a mountain and you're the first person ever to ski on it, ever, and there's no paths anywhere, and you see these trees and cliffs and you see all this stuff. So obviously you're not going to go into the tree, but you get to pick a path. Well, then maybe you keep going down that path over and over, and the groove gets deeper and deeper, and it gets harder to start a new path. And that's what we're doing. And Lisa, what inspired me about your book so much is you were able, from that place, you know, that you were flatlining, you were having these seizures, right?
Yeah.
How did you gather research when you were in the condition you were in?
I first started studying the polyvagal theory by Dr. Stephen Porges, because after I got my diagnosis that I was having vasovagal tonic seizures, I didn't know what that meant, so I had to research. And then from there, I did a lot of research on somatic healing therapies, and then went on to get certified in neuroleadership, and then to, you know, get my certificate in medical neuroscience, and really understand what was going on at a neurological level. And what I did was I took that information about how the brain maps and learns, the principles of neuroplasticity, and I started applying them with intention to myself. And I did just what you do. I did a ton of creative visualizations where I rehearsed a better outcome. As those seizures were about to hit, I knew what it felt like after having them for 30 plus years. I knew what it felt like to have a seizure approach and me have 1 to 2 seconds maybe to prepare. So what I did was I mentally went to that space of pre-seizure second, and I rehearsed, I crafted artificially and rehearsed a different outcome, a better outcome. And for me, that outcome was I would fight through whatever trauma was coming up rather than freeze around it and seize. So I rehearsed that so much that eventually after, well, actually it was almost 30 years. It was after about 27 years of seizures. After rehearsing that script so much, I was able to access it in that 1 second before that seizure hit. And I, for the first time in my life, fought through a seizure and didn't have one.
That's
and it was
phenomenal.
Very ugly and very, very clumsy and definitely not graceful, but it worked. And it and that's what we have the power to do, is to take our neuroplastic gifts, which we've been using since birth, and put intention to them and start using them in a smart manner. And creative visualization is one of the most powerful ways. And that, coupled with diet and somatic motion, gives you neuroplastic superpowers.
Lisa, tell us more about what you offer on your website and how people can get your book.
Yeah, so if you go to neurosculptinginstitute.com, on the homepage, you'll see a ton of options. The book is listed on the homepage. Our audio programs, neurosculpting audio programs from Sounds True, are on the homepage. And also on the homepage is a list of our classes and what you can take at the Institute, either in person or via live stream. We have a lot of live streamed events for anyone around the world. We have a store with audio downloads, online academy with self-paced learning classes, and we have a free library, which I highly encourage everyone to sign up for. It's totally free. There's about 400 different articles right now on neuroscience findings and how they relate to neuroplasticity, healing, and meditation. That's all free. And I spend a lot of time culling reputable pieces of information to give you the real deal.
Lisa, thanks so much for being here and for your book.
Thank you so much for taking the time. I love your analogies and how you're putting this information out into the world.
My name is Joe Davison, and you've been listening to Zentertainment Talk Radio on the web at zentertainment.org. I hope you all have a great week, and I will catch you next time. Peace.